Welcome, everybody, into the ESPN FC studios for this, the latest edition of the show. Alongside Steve Nichol, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thrilled to have you with us on this Friday as we get set to look ahead towards the weekend. Just a little bit, we'll be hearing from Sid Lowe, who will help us preview the Copa del Rey final on Saturday. But first things first, Stevie, let's look at the top of the Premier League, because that's where we'll find your former club.
Who's at the top?
There they are, Liverpool, 2 points ahead of Arsenal and 3 points ahead of Manchester City after the 3-1 victory over Sheffield United on Thursday. Manchester United, meanwhile, in sixth after their dramatic 4-3 loss away to Chelsea also on Thursday. Those two, of course, set to meet Sunday at Old Trafford. The odds makers have Liverpool installed as favorites, that despite their FA Cup defeat at Old Trafford just about 3 weeks ago. For more on this one, let's welcome into the show Mark Ogden as well as Stuart Robson. Robbo, I'll start with you here. As far as you looking at this Manchester United team, what do you expect we'll get out of them on Sunday coming off that collapse at Stamford Bridge, 72 hours ago?
Well, I think they're going to be drained both mentally and physically from that game because it was an end-to-end game. They obviously got themselves back into it. They thought they were going to win it, and then they lost it in the last few minutes. So they're going to be physically and mentally drained. And they've also got problems defensively. Varane had to come off at half-time. Evans then came off. So who's going to play against Maguire? Who's going to play alongside Maguire? They were better in the front areas. There was no question about that. Hoyland didn't have his best game, but there was there was some good play by Garnacho. Anthony had one or two very good moments as well. But they're also probably going to miss Casemiro in central midfield. So McTominay and Mainoo and Bruno Fernandes are going to have to do a very good job against Liverpool, where Liverpool are very strong at the moment. When you look at Manchester United at the moment, you're not quite sure what you're going to get. And that was summed up in the game against Liverpool in the FA Cup, which you talked about, when they dominated the first 20 minutes, played some really good free-flowing football, got in behind Liverpool's right-sided centre-back, and then for 60 minutes were completely outplayed before having a rally at the end and winning the game. So I'm not sure what Manchester United you're going to see.
Mm. Mark, it's been 24 hours now since the collapse against Chelsea. What else are we hearing from in and around the club? And just as somebody who's covered this team under Erik ten Hag for a long time, would you back them to muster a response on Sunday?
Well, as Robbo said, you know, you can't predict United, and it would be foolish to say they can't get a result in this game, because they can. They showed it 2 or 3 weeks ago in the FA Cup, but I do think that was kind of a fluke. I think it was a fortunate win because Liverpool should have won that game. And I think on this occasion, United are probably weaker because of the injuries they've got. You know, Varane, like I say, Evans is out as well. I think it'll be Willy Kambwala at the back alongside Harry Maguire. So the fullbacks will be the same. You know, you've got Dalot and Wan-Bissaka, who both lacked a bit of concentration, shall we say, at Chelsea. They're not the best defenders in the world. So I don't see many changes. And I think now what we're looking at is the kind of the long goodbye with Erik ten Hag. I just think we're getting to the point now where he can't save himself. I think that they're so far off the top four, fifth spot, even if that's a Champions League spot, they're nowhere near that. And I think they had such a bad season in the Champions League, being knocked out of the group stage. I just don't see how he can turn it around now. You know, he spoke about 2 or 3 months ago, judge when the players are fit. Well, they've been fit and they're injured again. We don't know why that is, but it's still a worry. And they've got a massive game at the weekend against Liverpool. There's no real sign that they can get anything out of it. And then they've got, you know, the FA Cup semi-final. They should win against a team for the Championship, but will they beat Chelsea or Man City in the final? Debatable. So I think this is a long drained out end to the season, and it probably lose to Liverpool on Sunday. It'll be an even longer drained out to the season because that's the biggest rivals.
Speaking of Erik ten Hag, he's had some interesting comments, Stevie, ahead of this game between Manchester United and Liverpool on Sunday. Let's take a look at him. Talking about the defeat away to Chelsea, quote, Manchester United dominated the game, but we made individual errors that cost us the game. We have to learn from it. When you are a Man United player, you should already know how to deal with this circumstance. Throwing the players under the bus there, Stevie?
To be honest, after the first line, I stopped listening.
Mm, why?
Did you see the game against Chelsea?
Mm-hmm.
They dominated the game. Are you serious? They got completely shellacked for 34 minutes and then they pounced on a horrendous mistake from Chelsea. And from that point on, this game was back and forward like a schoolboy game.
Mm.
At no stage did Manchester United dominate this game. They may have got themselves from 2-0 down to 3-2 up, but they certainly didn't dominate anybody. I mean, how many times is he going to come out and say things that are just not true? You know, that that's disingenuous. They did not dominate this game at all. Absolutely not.
Mark, you've said long goodbye. Can you give us a heat check right now on Erik ten Hag's seat? Because it feels like this game could be a blowout, and if it is, I wouldn't want to be in his chair come Monday.
Yeah, I don't think they'll get rid of him, the new board in Ilves. I don't think that they'll make a change before the end of the season. And that, you know, the on-record noises from United at the moment are he's our manager and we're planning for next season with Erik ten Hag. But I don't think anybody believes that. I don't think Erik ten Hag believes it. What I'm hearing behind the scenes is that, you know, he's toast. He's gone. He won't be there next season because a variety of reasons. The fact that they keep getting beat and they keep dropping points late in games, really late in games. But beyond that, they're sixth in the table. They're nowhere near the Champions League spots and he's massively underperformed this season. And if you manage Man United or Liverpool or Man City, if you underperform as the coach or the manager, you get one chance and that chance is this season for Ten Hag. And I think I'd be amazed if he stays. The only thing, well, there's two things that might keep him. First of all, it will cost around £14 million compensation to move him on and his coaches, which is, it's not massive money, but it's money in the sense that United haven't got a lot to play with this summer and they'll need to put every penny and pound they've got in the transfer market. And then the second thing is that there might not be a massive queue of coaches wanting to take the job, but it's Man United. So obviously there will be coaches out there better than Ten Hag who want to take the job. So I just think that, you know, the chance of getting the top four was what was probably keeping him alive. But I think now that is realistically gone. They're not playing well enough to get in the top four. They'll probably get to the FA Cup final, unless if they lose to Coventry in the semi-final, then that might finish him off then because they're a Championship team. But, you know, I think the reality is that he's not impressed Ineos. He's not impressed the players. He's not impressing the fans right now with the tactics and the selection. So I don't know what keeps him there. He's not done enough to persuade them to stay. So I think as soon as the season finishes, we'll see Ten Hag moved on and they'll find a new manager, which, as we know, they're very keen on Gareth Southgate, which hasn't gone down well with the fans either. So interesting times at Man United ahead, but definitely managerial uncertainty.
Does the fact, Stevie, that 3 weeks ago Manchester United beat this Liverpool team at Old Trafford have any impact, any bearing on the game Sunday?
If there's any bearing on it, it'll be Liverpool desperate to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Oh, so it's actually an advantage for Liverpool, not for Man United, you're saying? Like, it won't give Man United confidence, it'll just fire Liverpool up.
Listen, Man United players will know what happened in this FA Cup tie. They will know that in terms of football, because their legs will tell you, mm-hmm. they got run around everywhere. But you can't fault them, they showed heart and desire. And the fact that Liverpool didn't kill them off meant that they were always hanging around. And they took advantage of it. So Manchester United players will know that they're in for some more of the same. And they'll also know that you can't expect Liverpool to mess up in the final third as many times and as often as they did in this game. And as I said, if you're Liverpool, you are warned by what happened. As good as you played, as dominant as you were in the game, you didn't take your chances. As Klopp said, he made bad decisions in the final third. They'll be out to make sure that doesn't happen again. So, yeah, I would suggest that Man United players will be thinking, can we really do this twice in a row? I don't think they can.
How's that?
Robbo, one of the points of tension for Erik ten Hag seems to be whether he starts Marcus Rashford or not. What would you do? Would you start Marcus Rashford in this game?
Not really, no. I think Marcus Rashford has been poor the whole season. I don't like his attitude when things aren't quite going his way. He's not somebody that inspires the crowd when things aren't going his way. Yes, he can score a goal. He scored a goal in the FA Cup. It was a very good goal when he got through after Nunez had given the ball away. McTominay did well to find him and he finished it well. But I've not been a Rashford fan this season. I've been disappointed with his attitude. And Anthony looks as though he's got a bit of form back. He looks more hungry. I would say Garnacho is a key player for them. He's playing well on the counter-attack. He's running at people. He's now scoring goals. And he's got a better end product. And I just don't like the look of Rashford at the moment. So I wouldn't play him, no.
Mark, what's your sense? Will Rashford sit or start on Sunday?
Well, it did nothing when he came on at Chelsea. And I think Rasmus Højlund's a better option. So I wouldn't start him. And I think Erik ten Hag is losing patience with Marcus Rashford and his performances and his lack of work rate. I think that's the biggest concern, that he's not really doing what he should be doing. He's not pressing from the front. He's not making the opposition defenders work. And he's, you know, when he's not scoring goals, he has to do something else. He has to bring something else to the table. At the moment, he's not bringing anything. I think, you know, the big conversation about Marcus Rashford is, do United keep him this summer or do they try and move him on? And that's going to be difficult because there's not a lot of money in the market. There aren't a lot of takers out there. But if you take out that that 2 month period last year when he couldn't stop scoring. You know, the season before that was his worst in the United shirt. He had a poor start to last season. He finished last season, he tailed off, and this season has been poor. So the trend with Marcus Rashford is that he's nowhere near the player he was when he broke through. And I think at some point, United have got to say, well, is he worth the hassle of paying him £300,000 a week and having him in the team? And, you know, I'm not sure he is. And I think his performances this season don't merit him being in there. So as much as we've criticised Anthony all season, he played really well at Chelsea. You know, he had a good game. You've got Højlund, who's doing well. He puts the work rate in. Garnacho has to start. So I wouldn't start Marcus Rashford. No, and I don't think, well, I know, the Man United fans right now would prefer Marcus Rashford on the bench than in the team.
Augie, what about this summer? Do you think United will try and move him on?
I think they would probably like to, but I just don't see who's going to take him. You know, people are talking about PSG, but what I'm hearing, and I know Jules has heard the same, is that PSG aren't interested in Marcus Rashford. They've got other targets. So, you know, domestically, there's no market for him because nobody's got the money to take him away from Man United. And in Europe, well, the clubs that would usually spend big money, well, Real Madrid are going to sign a Kylian Mbappe on a free transfer, and that'll be all their budget gone on his signing on for his wages. Barcelona haven't got the money to do it, and whether they'd want him is a different matter. He's not a player that Bayern Munich would take. So where does he go? Where does Marcus Rashford go? I don't know where he goes. And that is United's big problem, that they've got a player that isn't really pulling up any trees. He's not justifying his salary. He's not justifying his contract. But good luck trying to find somebody to take him on, because right now there's not a lot of money in the game, bizarrely, because of how much money is in the game. But there's not a lot of money in the game swirling around for transfers. And the clubs that ordinarily would be able to afford to sign him either don't want him or have got other targets. So I think United are stuck with Marcus Rashford. The idea will be that a new manager comes in and tries to get something out of him that Erik ten Hag isn't getting, because I don't think Rashford and ten Hag have got the greatest relationship, and I think it's been borne out on the pitch. But, you know, somebody somewhere is going to try and get something out of Marcus Rashford, but he's 26 years old, he's not a kid anymore. Eventually, they're going to have to say, look, you've had enough chances. If you don't take the next one, we're going to have to find you somewhere else to play.
Sounds like it's not Marcus Rashford. Stevie, from a Liverpool perspective, who on Manchester United scares you, worries you? A lot of people pointing at Garnacho.
I think that's the obvious one. Mm-hmm. You know, Manchester United 100% are a counter-attacking side. They're not a team that will go and try and dominate you per se. Although to contradict myself, for 20 minutes in the FA Cup, they went after Liverpool, which caught everybody by surprise because it's something they hadn't done all season. I would suggest if they try that again, it might not go the same way. But there's no question right now the man that United are relying on is Garnacho. His energy, his desire, his willingness to not only go forward but to get back as well means that he really, for them, is so important in terms of the attacking side of the game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk Liverpool a little bit, because one of the things that always jumps out to me when you talk Liverpool is kind of an underlying frustration with Mo Salah, despite the productivity, right? It's definitely come through on recent shows. I want to get Rabo's take here. Rabo, when you see Mo Salah right now playing for Liverpool, what are you seeing from this player?
I share the same frustration that Stevie does, because we know he's a great player, but at the moment, and the FA Cup game was a great example, where he was a little bit lapsed when he was in possession. He didn't make the right decisions. He looked a little bit off the pace at times, and I can understand why he was taken off in midweek against Sheffield United. He needs to get his form back. He needs to get his, I suppose, enthusiasm back. He needs to make those same dynamic runs that he was making before he was injured. That's the Mo Salah that is a great player. When he drops 5, 10% off that, he's not the great player anymore. And Liverpool need him to be at the top of his game if they're going to win the title this season.
You think this is a blip, Stevie, or start of a decline? Is this maybe a time when Liverpool should start looking at moving on?
Listen, I don't... Look, if they get a crazy offer, then you've got to take it. You have to look at the big picture. You have to look after the club and the team. You know, you can't have your blinkers on and say, oh, we just can't let this guy go. You know, players better and as good as Mo Salah have come and gone at Liverpool. And guess what? We're still here. Liverpool's still there, still fighting at the very top. Mm-hmm. And so if you get a crazy offer, 150 mil or whatever it may be, I would suggest that would be the figure, then you take it. But the thing about Mo Salah is he's not doing anything different than he wasn't doing 5, 6 years ago. He still miscontrols it. He still gives it away. He still stands on it sometimes. So it's not... This is not all of a sudden Mo Salah's doing things that he didn't do. He's done that the whole time. The difference is, the last couple of games, he hasn't produced that bit of magic.
Payoff.
You know, you compensate for things that he might not be so good at, because you know if you need a goal, I mean... Who are you going to rely on more than him?
Right.
And actually, when he came off, I was a little surprised in the Sheffield game. Because generally, if you need a goal, you keep your goal scorer on. But having thought about it, he did look tired. He looked jaded. But then he's been out for a long time. So he will. That catches up on you eventually. So it turned out to be the right thing to do. And I think it was the right thing to do for Salah. But I'll tell you what, he'll be playing on Sunday. And Man United will know he'll be playing on Sunday.
Mark, what's your sense here? Do you think we're seeing the end of Salah at Liverpool?
Do you know, I don't. And I've had this conversation with other people as well. And I think, you know, his contract expires at the end of next season. So obviously they've got an issue there they need to address. And with Klopp going this summer, I just don't think they can afford to have Klopp go and Mo Salah go at the same time. I just think it would be too much of a loss for the team and the club to lose the manager and their best player. So I think Salah could be still delivering in 3 or 4 years' time. He looks after himself. He's got a great lifestyle. He's never relied on a massive burst of pace, but he's just got, you know, he's the ultimate big game player. I don't think you look around the Premier, look at Erling Haaland, you look at the Arsenal players. There's nobody at any of the other clubs that delivers in a big games as often as Mo Salah does. So I think if I was Liverpool, I'd actually consider giving a new contract, because I think he is a player that you can back to be still doing what he does now. Maybe not at the absolute level he does it at, but certainly not far off for the next 3 or 4 years. And I see what Steve is saying about the money that could come in for him, but he's still a massive player for Liverpool and a massive figure. And yes, he looks tired at the moment, but if you had to back a player right now in the Premier League to win you a game, a massive game when it mattered, it'd be Mo Salah, because that's what he's done for the last 4 or 5 years. So I'd stick with him as long as possible, because I think, you know, like they say at Liverpool, form is temporary, class is permanent, and he's the absolute example of that.
I'm saying you get the offer, you take it.
Right.
And one of the reasons I'm saying that is not only just because you look at the big picture, but let's not forget, when Mo Salah was away, Liverpool coped fine.
Right.
Liverpool won games, Liverpool scored goals. They've still got other players who can score goals. If there was going to be one player, I would suggest that you re-sign. And as much as I love Salah, I would suggest it's Virgil van Dijk. I think Virgil van Dijk would be a bigger loss.
Really?
Absolutely, I do, yeah.
Because of the position or
well,
why?
You can't. I've just told you that when Mo Salah left, they still won games. They replaced him within the squad they have. Never mind being able to get 150 million and go and buy somebody else to play up front. But Virgil van Dijk? No Virgil van Dijk? I don't know how you replace him.
Robbo, you can only pick one to keep at Liverpool. Van Dijk or Salah, who are you keeping?
I'm going with Stevie again. Van Dijk has been their leader. He's the player that gives them that little bit of solidity when the other teams look at the team sheet and they see that Van Dijk is on it. They know they're going to have struggle to score goals. And he's going to be a threat at set plays at both ends. And he's the leader of the team. So I would agree. I would keep Salah as well, mind you. But Van Dijk is the question you asked. Van Dijk would be the one.
Robbo, some are suggesting that this is pretty much the biggest hurdle left for Liverpool in their Premier League title chase. They've still got Spurs at home. They're away to West Ham, away to Villa, away to Everton. I mean, you know, there's some challenging away trips there for Liverpool still on the slate. But do you think if they can beat Manchester United on Sunday, the title is theirs?
I wouldn't say the title is theirs, but I don't think they're going to drop too many points from now to the end of the season. And this game at Manchester United, they are, as the table would suggest, a much, much better team than Manchester United. But Stevie will tell you, there's something about Old Trafford that Liverpool have gone there when they've been a great side and not always won there. Manchester United raised their game suddenly. But I still think Liverpool will be far too strong for Manchester United on Sunday. And I expect them not to drop that many points from now to the end of the season. That Tottenham game could be a tough one. And West Ham, every so often, pull a good performance out against Liverpool when they're playing at home.
Mark, is this the biggest test left for Liverpool away at Old Trafford?
I think it probably is, simply because of what happened in the cup tie of the week and how the tradition between the clubs and the rivalry, and how United do have to kind of, at some point, bounce back from that terrible performance at Chelsea, or terrible result at Chelsea. So it's the toughest game because of the history of the fixture rather than the actual form of the two teams. And I think if Liverpool can go there and get a win, the boost they'll get from that will be massive. And I think, you know, they do have an advantage right now over Liverpool and, sorry, over Arsenal and City in terms of points and goals. So, yeah, it probably is the toughest game, because I think a win at this one will give them a real kind of springboard going forward. But, you know, get this one out of the way. And there are tougher games down the line. But I do think this is a big hurdle to overcome, but not because of the form right now, but because of the history of the fixture.
What do you think, Stevie? Time to pop the champagne Sunday. Should Liverpool get the job done?
Well, I know everybody's completely discounting them, but we've still got to go to Everton.
Yep, I said that away, Everton, yeah.
Aye.
That worries you. That's of what you see
it's
on the run-in, that's what worries you?
I wouldn't say it worries me. It's a complete and utter banana skin. Completely.
Just down to the rivalry.
I played in a Liverpool side that equaled Nottingham Forest's unbeaten record. And we played Everton in the derby. And an Everton side, not as bad as this one.
Of course.
But they weren't very good, and we got beat 1-0. I mean, it happened. So I would rather not be going to Everton. Let me put it that way. I'd rather go somewhere else.
And you know the folks at Everton, they'll be up for it.
Can you imagine how
much they want, how bad they want that one? Yeah, stop Klopp from winning on his way out.
So, yeah, that's a banana skin.
Could be very interesting there. All right, let's take a look at the boys' predictions before we move on. Manchester United and Liverpool squaring off Sunday at Old Trafford. Well, you know what happens on this show when everybody's in agreement. It usually goes the other way. Stevie, Robbo, and Mark all saying 3-1 Liverpool. I'm going in a vastly different direction, saying 4-1 Liverpool to beat Manchester United on Sunday. And a reminder, FA Cup semifinals available for you here on ESPN+. April 20th and the 21st. On April 20th, it's Manchester City taking on Chelsea. And then on April 21st, the surprise package of the tournament, Coventry City taking on Manchester United. Again, both those games available for you right here on ESPN+. And a good time to remind you about our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Plenty of bonus content from this show and others like Football America is available for you over there. Join the more than 3 million subscribers today.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Copa del Rey final coming up Saturday in Seville. Surprise matchup. Athletic Club de Bilbao taking on Mallorca. Athletic Club, the favorites. Mallorca, the underdogs. The Islanders, led by their manager, Javier Aguirre, who has almost never had a dull moment behind a microphone.
Empezamos la rueda de prensa de Javier Aguirre.
Le preguntábamos por su situación en el banquillo.
¿Me preguntabas tú,
cabrón? Yo.
¿Por qué no juego? Y le dije, mira, no juegas porque no estabas en forma para jugar.
Cuando hace frío, pónganse bolsas, así, mira.
Una prima, nada más 500 euros. ¿Sabes lo que es 500 euros para la gente que está allá afuera?
Bien, Oscarito, cabrón, qué tirazo, la puta madre que te parió.
Seguramente le dije eso.
Un whiskito y a dormir.
Stuart Robson still with us. Sid Lowe joins the program as well. Sid, I'll start with you. Aside from Aguirre's press conference antics, what else do you make of this incredible Mallorca run to the Copa del Rey final?
Well, it's completely unexpected. As you say, this is a final with two clubs for whom it's absolutely historic. Mallorca have only won the Copa del Rey once. That was 21 years ago. Athletic haven't won a major trophy in 40 years. They've won two Super Cups, but not a major trophy since 1984. I think when you look at Mallorca's run, the thing that is most striking is that this isn't the run of a team that got an easy draw. It's true, and this is always the case of the first division teams, that they played teams from a lower tier for the first couple of rounds. But then they faced Girona when Girona were top of the table. Girona had come from putting five past Sevilla and they went 3-0 up before half-time. They then got through against Real Sociedad. Now, Aguirre himself admitted they'd been a little bit fortunate, but if there's an image of this Copa del Rey run for Mallorca, it's that moment before the penalty shootout in the semi-final against Real Sociedad when the players are in a huddle and they start cheering each other and celebrating and jumping around and joking and laughing at what should have been the most tense moment of the entire cup run, what should have been a moment when everyone is terrified. They're there laughing. And of course, what that does is it has a double impact. It shows you how relaxed they are. It shows you that they feel that they've already won, that there's no pressure on them. But also, of course, the Real Sociedad players looking at them think, oh my goodness, this lot think they're already through. And they were.
Final Saturday at La Cartuja. Rabo, you're going to be calling it. What do you make of this Mallorca side?
I think they're very good defensively, or have been in recent weeks. We saw them against Barcelona. It was only Yamal goal that later on in the game that rescued Barcelona to get the win. But the shape that they play a 5-3-2. I think that's how you can describe it. It's not really a 3-5-2. And that's going to allow, I think, Athletic Club a lot of possession in the game. The fullbacks for Athletic Club should have lots of the ball. As I said, they're good, solid defensive players. They've got a good understanding at the two centre-halves, or three centre-halves. Capete has done well on the left-hand side of that. They've got wing-backs that are going to play deep. But they rely very much on Larin, if he is going to play, and Marici. And they're two totally different strikers. Marici's good with his back to goal and good in the air. And Larin, we know, can make forward runs. But they've got to get enough of the ball to them and they've got to play close together to cause Athletic Club problems. I'm not sure they're going to do that.
Sid, I know you're a romantic. Anybody that follows you on social media sees all your tweets about Oviedo. So I know you can appreciate this final. But what is the rest of Spain saying about a final that doesn't include Barcelona, doesn't include Real Madrid, doesn't include Atletico Madrid?
Yeah, I'm torn between giving you the slightly more positive answer and the slightly more negative answer. Now, on the one hand, there's absolutely no doubt that a Copa del Rey final has a level of excitement anyway, that this is seen as, if you like, the big day of the season. And there's, I think, a very genuine sense of warmth towards both what Mallorca have done and what Athletic Club have done, and the sense that this is really, really important for both of these clubs, a genuinely historic moment. But it is true, and I think the way you frame the question is right, it is true that in Spain, a game that doesn't include Madrid or Barcelona or Atletico or maybe even a Sevilla or a Betis or someone like that maybe lacks something, or at least doesn't get talked about, doesn't get the attention that perhaps it deserves. So there's no doubt that tomorrow this will feel huge, and for anyone who goes anywhere near Seville, particularly in terms of the numbers of fans travelling from Bilbao, it will feel like an absolutely monumental occasion. But it is true that the thrust, for example, of the media coverage, the thrust of what fans are talking about, is taken away from it a little bit by the fact that it's not Madrid or Barcelona. And of course, by the fact that Madrid and Barcelona play in the Champions League next week. So there's already a degree of some people kind of looking beyond the cup final rather than looking at Sevilla on Saturday night.
Bravo, what do you make of this Athletic Club side? The Williams brothers obviously get a lot of the headlines. Is that fair?
It certainly is. You know what I mean? And they could cause problems against the wing-backs of Mallorca. They've both got pace, or one's got a lot of pace without the ball, and that's Iñaki Williams. The other one, Nico Williams, is good running with the ball. He's got the pace to go past people, and they play on either wing, so it's a good combination. I like Sunset playing in the hole just behind the main striker, Guruzeta, who's their leading goal scorer. But whenever I watch him play, I've always been slightly disappointed. I like Vesca in midfield. They've got a good combination at the back as well. So I think they're a very good side. They've played well this season. You know, when you look at the two teams where they are in the league, Athletic Club are fifth and they're putting some very good performances. But they're going to have to play better than they did against Real Madrid because they play with no intensity. They cause very few problems. But on their day, they're a good team. There's no doubt about that.
Sid, Athletic Club obviously have an amazing cup history, though, as you mentioned. It's been 40 years since they last won this tournament. How much pressure is Ernesto Valverde's side under?
A huge amount. Absolutely a huge amount. As you say, Athletic have a fantastic cup history. It's very much the kind of the identity of the club. Now, this is a club that, because of its policy of only playing with Basque players, they know they're not candidates to win the La Liga title. And the Copa del Rey is their one opportunity for success. You look back at that run since 1984, they've actually been in five finals. They haven't won any of them, although it's different this time. And I think this increases the pressure. If you look at those previous finals, you've got Barcelona, you've got Real Sociedad in there. They played, of course, Atletico Madrid in the final of the Europa League. They didn't win any of those. And I think what that does, of course, is it puts them in a position to say, OK, that's understandable. They're now against Mallorca, and you're absolutely right, they are definitely favourites. I think the pressure is huge. And for what it's worth, I think very, very explicitly, Mallorca will play on that. Mallorca will play to try and deny Athletic the chance to create chances, to try and deny them the opportunity to run at them and not necessarily go looking, or at least not very insistently looking for the goal, and knowing that as time passes, it's Athletic that are more likely to feel the tension of that. I think this is a huge, huge occasion for Athletic. I genuinely don't think you can overstate it. I think tomorrow, when we see the number of people from Bilbao in the city, in fact, already tonight, it's absolutely crazy there. I think we'll get a sense of the enormity of this for them, because Athletic's a genuinely big club, even if it's not a Madrid or a Barcelona. It's not far off in terms of its kind of sense of importance for the city, in terms of the sense of its fan base, and I think the pressure is huge. That said, it's a very good team. It's a team with a very sensible manager who's very good at taking the pressure off them, and they will do everything they can to try and treat this as a normal game, even though they know it absolutely isn't.
Okay, Sid, before we let you go, let's get some predictions on the record. You're going with Mallorca to win in penalties. Why?
Because I think they will make it tough for Athletic. And Robert was talking about the importance of the Williams brothers, how good they are when they're running into space. I think that those wing-backs that you can sometimes get behind, I think won't be wing-backs. I think they'll be full-backs. I think Robert's absolutely right. It'll be five at the back. They'll make it very, very hard for Athletic to find a way through. I think they will be defensive. And I think that's what their game will be based on. And so I can see a similar scenario to the semi-final against Real Sociedad, the second leg, where really and truly Real Sociedad made more happen, had much more of the ball, but Mallorca found a way through. So I can see a scenario in which, yeah, it finishes 1-1 and Mallorca win it on penalties.
Sid picking Mallorca. As you saw, I'm picking Mallorca. Everybody knows that's just because Javier El Vasco Aguirre is from Mexico. Rabo, you're picking Athletic Club. Why?
Because I think they're the better team. The league table tells you they're a better team. They've got more expansive players in the forward areas. And as Sid and I have just said, I think Mallorca will try and play a very defensive game. They will sit really deep. And there was a game earlier on in the season against the two sides where Athletic Club won 4-0. So I'm halving that scoreline to make it 2-0 to Athletic Club. I think they are by far away the better side. And they've got exciting front players. And I'm looking forward to seeing Sunset play just in behind the main striker.
There we have it. Copa del Rey final Saturday in Seville at La Cartuja. Athletic Club looking for their first Copa del Rey title since 1984. Mallorca going for their first domestic cup trophy since 2003. Sid Lowe, as always, great to have you with us here on ESPN FC.
Pleasure.
And a reminder, Sid will be on the sidelines tomorrow from La Cartuja for the Copa del Rey final. Athletic Club against Mallorca. Check it out, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on ESPN+. And a reminder, make sure to check out the extra time today. Sadly, no Sid, but we will have Stevie, Rabo, and Mark Ogden taking your questions from social media.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much I know.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Championship on ESPN Plus this weekend. Norwich City taking on Ipswich Town. That's 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time Saturday morning. And then at 10 a.m. we got Cardiff City against Hull City. That early kickoff featuring, of course, Josh Sargent of the U.S. men's national team having himself a great season over in the championship. And we'll be keeping tabs on all the Americans, not just in the championship, but across Europe. On the next edition of Football Americas, coming to you live right here on ESPN Plus, Monday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Hercules Gomez back from his vacation. Ali Krieger will be back with us as well, talking U.S. Women's National Team in the She Believes Cup. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN. For Stevie, I'm Seb. Thanks for watching. Don't go far. Extra Time starts right now. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC studio. Steve Nichols, Stuart Robson, and Mark Ogden with us here for Extra Time. Stevie, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Just all right? That was a pretty easy show today. Bish bash bosh, as Dan Thomas would say.
You don't think anything else to come out with?
No.
No?
Just checking the temperature. Checking the temperature. First question is for you.
Oh.
Who does Steve think will win the Celtic Rangers match?
Rangers, of course.
That's your team, right?
Team
of your childhood?
Well, it is my team, but since they made the change of manager, they've gone up a gear. And unfortunately for Celtic, they've gone the opposite way. So there's no question that the favourites are Rangers. And I absolutely hope Rangers win. Comfortably, I hope.
Craig was adamant that you're not supposed to say Old Firm Derby. You're just supposed to say Old Firm. Is that true? No? That's a Burley thing?
No.
Okay. Well, he made it seem like it was a Cardinal sin.
I wouldn't have said it, would I?
Natum's Interior Decorator. For Mark, as a journalist, have you ever done an interview with a player or coach that afterwards had affected your perception about them, either positively or negatively?
Listen, generally, if somebody gives you their time to speak to you, you generally come away thinking, actually, they're not as bad as I thought. So I'm struggling to think of... I thought Jose Mourinho was quite cold, actually. So on the flip side, I thought he was... I thought he'd have a bit more charisma, a bit more kind of effervescence, shall we say, and he was just not interested. This was on a summer tour. This was over at UCLA back in 2017, and he was just... didn't want to be there. Jurgen Klopp, I always find quite good. He can be quite grumpy at times. He can be quite difficult, but when he's good, he's really good and he's really pleasant. So, yeah, I think if they're in a good mood, I think you come away thinking, actually, these guys are okay. Never interviewed Stevie or Stewie, so I'm not quite sure what they were like, but yeah, I'll leave that one there.
How are you with the press?
Straightforward.
Really?
Straightforward.
You didn't let your personality come out?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them.
Did you get on with the media? What was the? Because it's different times.
Aye.
I think now it's very like combative.
Yeah. No. There was a couple of times when some of them got up my nose, but I would just tell them, and they seemed to take it. And the next time I had anything to do with them, we were kind of normal. I think you should probably ask Augie this. I think journalists would rather you were just straightforward and were to the point. Mm-hmm. And then that way you know where you stand.
Mm. Augie?
Would it be right, Augie?
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's different nowadays because a lot of players, getting to players is so much harder now because they're surrounded by club media officers, their own PR teams. You know, the United team that I covered a lot, you're talking maybe 10, 15 years ago, you got to know those players, and you know, you still see them now, and we're all kind of getting old and grey, and we still bump into each other at times, and you know, chat about things, and it's almost like you build a rapport with these people, these players, because you've kind of, you spent time with them, you spoke to them after games in a mix zone or in an interview. Nowadays, it's so much harder for journalists coming through because it's so hard to get time with players, and they're so suspicious of you because they've seen something on TikTok or on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and it's hard. But yeah, I mean, you do want a normal relationship with people. You just want them to be honest and to be blunt if they have to be, and front you up. There's nothing worse than players sulking because they think you've done something you haven't, or vice versa. So yeah, just be normal people and just front people up. That's the best way to deal with people.
Next question for Stevie and Robbo. We'll start with you, Stuart. In the FA Cup game, Endo, McAllister and Szoboszlai dominated United's midfield in the second half. But with all of United's injuries in defence, do you think Liverpool will have more of an advantage in midfield or up front? What do you think, Robbo?
They're going to have the advantage in midfield because they're better players and they've got more energy. They're a much better team in midfield than Manchester United are. So they're going to have an advantage there. And it depends in who they play up front. I think Nunez is in good form at the moment. Diaz is playing well. Salah needs to just slightly improve his form. But all over the pitch, I have to say, Liverpool are better than Manchester United. So that's going to be key to it.
I'd ask if you agree, but...
Well, yeah, because if you're in charge in the middle of the park, regardless of how good your front players are, they're going to get the ball. So, yeah, I would agree with Robbo, the middle of the park. And I think probably Augie would be the best one to ask here, but I thought Manu looked really, really jaded at Chelsea. I don't know whether the amount of games and playing for England and the whole thing...
Maybe hitting a wall, you think?
..has physically caught up with him. I just thought he looked really...
Do you see
really
that, Augie?
Wild. Yeah, but Ten Hag has got a problem in the sense that he's the only one that you can rely on to be fit and to last the game. I mean, Casemiro, for me, has just suddenly looked really old and he's just looking like he's miles off the pace. So he can't rest Maynard and play Casemiro because he can't trust Casemiro. Christian Eriksen's kind of dropped off the radar a little bit recently. So, you know, Kobbie Mainoo is the only guy that you can actually trust to actually get through a game. But you're right. I mean, he looks like he's feeling the heat right now. And I think he needs a bit of support around him, but he's not really getting that because the players that should be there, you know, Amrabat's not really appeared for a while. So Amrabat, Eriksen, Casemiro, who do you trust of those three to fill in for Kobbie Mainoo? You can't really trust any of them. So he's stuck with having to play him, even though he probably wants to rest him.
Augie, we touched on this in the show. Who'd be your best bet on who'll probably take over for Ten Hag this summer?
Well, Gareth Southgate has got a really good chance. He knows people at the club, the people at the club like him, certainly the new regime that are there right now. But obviously there's an issue at the moment with the Euros. United can't afford to wait until the end of the summer. I'm not sure he's the guy they should be waiting for anyway, but if I had to say right now who I think it will be, I think it's more likely to be Gareth Southgate than Erik ten Hag. But I think if they had a real choice of anyone, I think he should take Roberto Di Zerbi. I think he's an obvious candidate. He's what they need to shake up the squad. But I think the safe money is Gareth Southgate.
As a Liverpool fan, Stevie, your reaction to Manchester United going with Gareth Southgate would...
Yes, please, and twice on Sunday. is that straightforward?
Yeah,
enough for you?
Yeah, exactly. Straightforward, honest. Yeah. Next question for Robbo. Does Cole Palmer have a higher upside than Foden or Saka?
Does he have a greater upside? Well, up until recent times when Saka's been injured and he didn't play particularly well in the game against Man City, Saka has been magnificent both for England and Arsenal. So he's got so many things that he can do. He can also go down the outside and get crosses in with his right foot. He can cut inside, play little one-twos, score goals. So he's an outstanding player. Of course he is. But you look at the other two that you just mentioned. Foden's in the form of his life at the moment. He's playing as well as he possibly can. He didn't play that well against Arsenal, but he was crowded out in that game. And when you talk about Cole Palmer, he's sort of a languid sort of runner with the ball, but he's also a good little player of one-twos. He can score goals. All three are great players at the moment. Who I would pick as the main one would probably be Foden, then on current form, Cole Palmer, and Saka just behind them because he's been slightly injured.
Okay. Of those three, highest upside, Stevie?
Highest upside? Well, I'm with Robbo, Foden.
Yeah.
I mean... I mean, I think Saka's a better player than Palmer right now. I just wonder if Cole Palmer's going to... It's very easy to forget that he's still learning again. But as much as he scored a hat-trick yesterday, I think I said previously that he disappears out of games a lot. Now, whether that's to do with the team he's playing for, it could be that as well. But if he can figure out how to play for 90 minutes and be involved for more time in the 90 minutes, then he could be fantastic. But right now, I think Foden's the best of the three.
Okay. Next question is for me. Seb, are you going to put an ESPN FC team together for the TST tournament? Who makes your starting seven? So the TST tournament is obviously, it's a 7-on-7 tournament here in the United States with $1 million cash prize. It's actually going to be on ESPN Plus this year. Our colleague Ali Krieger is playing
like
in the women's tournament. I'm just giving people context for
why
the question. Talk
to, you're looking at me, talk to me like that.
Well, I'm just giving...
I know exactly what
it is. Oh, you do? You know about the TST? I didn't know you knew all about that. All right, so help me make this
team.
I did
it on the show. What are you talking about?
Like yesterday, you announced something. Oh, you did something with Ali? Yesterday?
No. The last tournament they had, we did it on the show all the time.
Really?
Wrexham batter in the US, 12-0.
That was last year, yeah. Uh-huh. So they're doing that again this year. Are you, first of all, are you going to be on our 7-a-side team?
Don't be stupid.
Stupid.
I don't know whether you could get 7 people that...
I don't know, I mean...
they could run.
Let me throw some names at you.
I don't know the Robert can run.
Ali Moreno's in, right? Ali's in great
Ali
shape.
Couldn't run when he was playing.
I mean, well, relative to... Huh.
I don't think Robbo can run. Augie's not on that.
Whoa. I'm not going to sit here and let you trash Augie. I played football with Augie in Qatar, and he's got a nose for goal.
I don't think Augie could run. That was my bonus.
He's got a nose for a lot of things. I'm not sure it's goals.
He's a... mobility was not his strength. He was a poacher, though. So
could you get 7?
I mean, Augie, Jules Nadum.
Jules Laurent.
Nadum. Jules is a good, very good player, okay. And he's in very good shape. Ali, Augie, Jules, Nadum. Can we throw Xhaka in goal? Would he count? He's a big body. I mean, he don't have to do too much.
He can't move.
I'm a 6, and I'm not in very good shape right now. My back's terrible. I don't know if we have a starting 7.
Yeah, I didn't think we
did. Burley out of retirement.
Yeah.
You out of retirement.
It may as well be $1 billion. Prize money.
Yeah.
We ain't getting it.
What about Mario Melchior?
Oh, yeah, Mario. That's
Mario, yeah.
Oh, you know who's been on the show recently?
Garcia.
He's in great shape. Luis Garcia, Jurgen Klinsmann.
Jurgen
plays still plays
Sunday,
a lot, yeah.
Jurgen played against my mate last week.
You know what? I'm not minding our chances now as I start to fill out the roster.
I'll tell you one bet. You got no chance.
Okay.
No chance.
You just disrespect me at every turn. For Mark, what percentage of United supporters place the blame for yesterday's loss on Moore, Erik ten Hag or the players? All right, so how do we break down the blame pie?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because there is a split. I mean, there's a split of fans in the sense that they blame the players for everything, in the sense that it's always the players that have got rid of managers. So there's a feeling that ten Hag has been let down by a group of players that always let managers down. But ultimately, ten Hag is a guy that, you know, made the team selections, decided the tactics, made the changes that he did during the game, which kind of took the momentum away. Didn't spot the fact that United were playing keep ball with 5 minutes to go, and they weren't actually making any attacking passes. So I think you're probably looking at the majority are now blaming Ten Hag, but there's still a large minority that feel that he deserves a pass because of the players that he's working with. So, but I think last night was one of those where it keeps happening. So it's got to be the coach; it can't be the players all the time.
You can't. Here's the thing. You absolutely. The fact that they didn't win the game. I'm sorry. The fact that they lost the game is 100% on the players. Because had all 11 of them, 11 of them, by the way, not one of them, 11 of them, had all 11 of them been alive for the corner kick, they wouldn't have lost the game. Ten Hag wasn't picking anybody up at corners, or wasn't organising anybody at corners. It's down to the players. So they wouldn't have lost the game, but for the players, 100%.
So when it's set piece stuff, when it's that like concentration stuff, it's not down to the coach.
He can't do anything, but what is he supposed to do about that? Nothing.
Good question here. For all, your favourite football player of all time. Players. Bravo.
Players.
Yeah, as many as you like. Your favorites, Bravo.
I tell you what, I played against a player, a Romanian, Georgi Hagi. He was a magnificent player.
Wow.
He was had a great left foot. He could go past people. He was an inspiration at that particular time. In England, I would say I liked Brian Robson. You either like Brian Robson or Glenn Hoddle in the 80s. I like Brian Robson because he affected games more than anybody else. And of course, an old Liverpool player, Graham Souness, was excellent both with and without the ball, and he could look after himself as well for Liverpool. So they're three players that I really admired.
Go on, Stevie, your faves.
Well, I'm going old school because as soon as I read this, I was thinking about when I was a kid.
I mean, that's really when you have favorite footballers, right? When you're a kid. As you're an adult, it kind of
changed.
You might appreciate people, but it's
I mean, Willie Henderson played for Rangers. I'm a Rangers man.
Okay.
George Best, Dennis Law. I mean, they were guys that I looked up to. Kenny Dalglish. I remember going and watching Dalglish playing at Air United for Celtic when I was maybe the 70s. I'd probably be about 12 or 13.
Air United was your first club, yeah.
And Air United was my first club, yeah. So I kind of go. I'm going to go further back.
Okay.
I mean, Maradona, Pele, obvious.
But they were your contemporaries.
Yeah.
Like it's different.
If I would go with one, I would go with Maradona.
Just because you enjoyed watching him.
I've said it 1,000 times. The fact that he did what he did in the time that he was playing, when you could rattle people round the neck.
And they rattled him.
And get a yellow card for it and not get sent off. I mean, this guy had to jump 6 foot in the air every time he was challenged. And the fact that he was able to still do what he did under those circumstances, that's for me why he was just frightening.
Plus, he got one over on England. That never hurts.
Always helps.
In the resume from a Steve Nichol perspective. Augie, what about you? Who are your favourites coming up? Or now?
Yeah, so modern era. I still go for Cristiano Ronaldo, Pete Ronaldo. So I think he was absolutely brilliant, great goal scorer. He was fantastic for 10, 12 years for Man United and Real Madrid. So I think Ronaldo, for me, is just one of the greatest of all time. But if you're going back to when I was a kid, I think the first player that really, really caught my attention was during the World Cup in 82 was Paolo Rossi. I just love the fact that he talked about, goals and being a poacher. I just love the way that Rossi scored goals from 2 yards. I think that's just an amazing talent. Despite the fact it looks easy, it's a talent. But I suppose the one player that I always kind of idolised as a kid was Mark Hughes at Man United. He's just an amazing player. And if obviously the generation that are watching this now probably think, who's Mark Hughes? Just go on YouTube, put in Mark Hughes' greatest goals. And you'll see some incredible scissor kicks, overhead kicks, headers. And he was just an amazing goal scorer. He wasn't the quickest, but I'm sure the guys will attest to it. He was so physical, so strong. And he was a scorer of great goals rather than a great goal scorer.
I kicked him. I absolutely lashed him once. I could not have kicked him any harder.
On purpose?
Absolutely on purpose.
What was the situation?
Well, the situation was I thought I broke my foot. I mean, this guy was made of granite. I am telling you, I lashed him big time. And I thought I broke my foot, and he just trotted away. Definitely not had happened.
There you have it. All right, I think that's all the questions we've got for extra time here. Our thanks to Stuart and Mark Ogden. Always great to be with you guys. And a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Plenty to discuss on a busy weekend in world football.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt
the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.